I've been on a low, I've been taking my time.
Hi everyone, this is Project Mayday. Like these are your hosts, Bree and G, and we have Pete Cruz here today with us, who is a Navy veteran. He is 37 years old, and he currently is an EMS specialist with a local EMS agency here. So welcome, Pete Cruz.
Thank you.
So, what made you join the military at 17?
I always had a passion to serve. I always wanted to serve ever since I was a little kid. When I graduated from high school, I went to college for a year, and then just decided this wasn't for me and went and signed up. And it was a 5-day process.
What'd you score on your entrance test?
94.
Oh, show off. Okay, so what made you join the Navy instead of the other branches?
I actually looked at the Army originally, and after talking with a recruiter and going to actual MEPS in Columbus, Ohio, and meeting with them about the contract, I heard and read some things that I wasn't a huge fan of and ended up pursuing the Navy.
That's great. So you served 10 years in the Navy, and you got medically discharged. So can you tell us how that happened?
I had a handful of injuries while I was in the military. Some were when I was in the Middle East, some while I was on ship, and some stateside that had no work involvement, actually, were just personal life issues. After all that, I had quite a few surgeries, multiple shoulder and knee surgeries, and a few pelvic surgeries. And at that point, the military pretty much decided I was a little too broken.
I mean, did you feel that way too?
Yes, for a long time, but I really wanted to stay, and I fought to try and stay in for a few years, and, and finally ended up losing that fight.
So, something very interesting is that there was a policy issued from the Department of Defense, which was put into effect as of October 1st, 1993, and it went until September 20th of 2011, which was the don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue, and don't harass. So there were feelings of military officials were saying that it could lower morale to have homosexuals participate in the military. What are your views on that?
It was a difficult thing to deal with while I was in the military. There, it depended on where you served. It's not just a cookie cutter for everyone. Every command is different. Every chain of command within that command is different. I myself figured out my sexuality when I was 21, in 2004. I had been serving for 3 years already at that point. I had to hide who I was. Because of the don't ask, don't tell policy, I felt that I served at a command and under a chain of command that would not be accepting of that in any way, shape, or form. I personally witnessed someone get beat almost to death because they were openly gay. And after you see something like that, it kind of scares the crap out of you.
Yeah.
So I had to hide who I was the entire time I was in, which was both difficult and mentally exhausting.
So how did you hide it? Did you, like, hang out with the boys and go, like, girl shopping? Like, well, how did you hide, you know?
Girl shopping.
You know what I mean. Navy. I mean, come on.
You know. I wasn't an extremely flamboyant person in the first place. Mm-hmm. I still, to this day, love camping and hunting and all those things. So hanging out with the boys really wasn't that difficult of a concept for me. It was just a matter of never dating anyone, not showing my personal life, not talking to people. I had a handful of extremely close friends. They were the only ones that ever knew.
So. After you officially came out, was your relationship different to the guys that were in the Navy with you?
Yes. Not for all of them. There's some that had a suspicion by the time I'd gotten out, maybe, or some that just didn't care. You know, it's still Pete, so it's fine. But yes, my relationship with Some people definitely changed. Some of them no longer speak to me. Mm-hmm. Some of them are very uncomfortable.
You're not my type. It's fine. Yeah.
So what about now? Let's say now, if you were to be in the Navy now in this day and age, mm-hmm. and you would you come out now?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. I have friends, some that are still in, actually, that are openly gay, and it's working well for them. A few of them are married, which is awesome, and they've had a good time of it. I've known some people that worked for commands while I was in that they were able to be out, and everyone was okay with it, and it was fine.
Was that before the policy change?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, like I said, it's not different at every command and every chain of command within that command. So.
So did you date at all then in that decade of time?
I did. I actually, my first boyfriend, had a boyfriend for 4.5 years.
And no one knew?
No.
Well, was he also in the military?
Yes. On the same ship.
Oh. Wow. Mm-hmm. Sneaky snake.
Everyone just thought we were close, that we were like
best
brothers.
Friends. Your best friends.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Mm. But it was difficult. It's like living two entirely different lives. Mm-hmm. You know, you're one person at work. You're this hard ass, you know, manly, tobacco spitting, you know, whatever guy. And then go home and behind closed doors, it's a drastically different lifestyle.
So you were deployed multiple times,
yes.
Correct? So did your boyfriend get deployed with you?
One deployment, yes.
So how was that? I mean, normally spouses would not be deployed together.
No.
So how did that affect your job performance? Do you think you were more anxious about the deployment?
Actually, no. I was probably harder on him during deployment because I have a higher standard, I guess. I expected more from him, so I probably worked him harder than anyone else, honestly.
Were you the boss?
I was his supervisor, yes.
Oh, man, there's so many red flags there.
Yes.
Even if it wasn't a don't ask, don't tell, you couldn't have said anything.
Correct. Oh. Absolutely. There was a lot of CMJ codes that were broken.
So you didn't never really play it by the rules, is that what you're saying?
I did. Just not when it came to my personal life.
Not romantically.
Yes.
So you said you've been on multiple deployments. Mm-hmm. Where have you been?
I've been to the Middle East. I've been to Iraq. I've been on two deployments on the USS John C. Stennis, which is a carrier, both of which headed to the Gulf. Three deployments on the Stennis, actually. And then one on the USS John Paul Jones, which is a destroyer out of San Diego.
So which one did you like the best, I guess? I mean, I'm sure nobody likes deployments, but...
But the 2004 deployment on the Stennis was probably the most fun. It's a RIMPAC exercise, the Rim of the Pacific. So you do exercises with the other countries and their navies and stuff.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then you all pull into Hawaii and there's big, you know, sports tournaments and dinners and all sorts of stuff. It was fun.
That's cool.
That was the most enjoyable of them. The rest of them were all in the Gulf. Not that the Gulf is, you know, this horrible place, but it's hot. Oh, and when you're sitting in the Gulf just launching aircraft, it's very boring.
So what? Yeah. So speaking on that, what did you guys do to keep yourselves entertained?
Well, it was a different time. There was no Wi-Fi on the ship or anything like that. Then even the internet was a difficult concept at times, especially when you're over there in the Gulf. You have a lot of security settings and stuff. So emails, we played a lot of card games. Board games and stuff when we had downtime. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ships do pretty good on having exercise equipment and setting up fun things randomly. Once you're out to sea for so long, you can have a beer day. Mm. You know, once you hit a crest, I believe, I want to say it was 60 days. I can't remember. Out to sea. Mm. Then you can have a beer day where everyone gets two beers. They have a barbecue and
cool.
Stuff.
Yeah. So with all the stuff that's happening, you were there for a decade. You're living this double life once you kind of figured out who you were. And how did you mentally deal with the pressures of the secrecy and living this double life?
At first, it was extremely difficult when I finally figured myself out. It was extremely difficult to deal with.
Why?
Very stressful. Just the fear of, is anyone going to find out? What's going to happen if someone finds out? Am I going to get the crap beat out of me? Or am I going to get discharged? Am I going to lose this career that I've come to love? It was very intense, honestly. And then you just figure out how to deal with it. And it's more of a matter of accepting yourself and just acknowledging that, well, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to have to do for now. Unfortunately, because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I didn't feel as if I could go seek professional help. Because I felt like that could possibly get reported. I'd heard of cases that had.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
So you really had no outlet for the secret that you had to for your career.
I absolutely felt like I had no outlet. I had friends, my close friends that knew that I finally eventually told. And that's who I usually talk to about things. We kind of vent to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, and in all honesty, I turned to a lot of caffeine, tobacco, and alcohol, which was a horrible thing to do. And then I did that for quite some time.
So when these coping mechanisms that you did not have, essentially, you get out of the military and you didn't want to leave the military. So you have a lot of conflict here. You've had medical issues. You got discharged due to all of these injuries. You know, you're coming into your own. When you left the military, did you feel disappointed or did you almost feel some relief? Because you left, would you say, January or February of 2011, and then this Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in September.
Yeah, it was repealed that summer by Congress, and then that summer, or that September, it took effect. And I was frustrated, but happy.
No.
That makes sense. For myself, it was like, well, that sucks. it was very frustrating.
But
at the same time, for people that are in that I knew and stuff, it's like, well, I'm glad you can finally be who you are. And I know at first it was probably still concerning for a lot of people. There was a lot of pushback when it first got repealed of, I don't want to know if I sleep in the same berthing with a gay guy, type thing, or a gay woman, or whatever the case may be. And it's like, well, you always have. You just didn't know.
Yeah. Nothing happened before.
Correct.
It
was frustrating. And I was very frustrated with the military when I got out. I felt abandoned. When I was discharged, it was quite literally, here's your paperwork, here's your VA ID card. Have a nice day.
Huh.
And I was very frustrated by the time I got out. The assistance programs at the time, transition assistance programs, which are only a couple days, basically learning how to write a resume and do a job interview. Primarily what the focus was. It was very little mental health, anything at all, which I've been told has changed. I don't know how much. But it was frustrating. I was very angry by the time I got out of the military because I wanted to stay in, and I felt like I was just kicked to the curb.
So now, leaving the military, we transition into you coming over to California now?
Actually, when I first got out, I moved up to Washington for over a year. I actually traveled the country for about 6 months and went to all the national parks, just my dog and myself in the truck, and traveled and enjoyed, saw friends.
And you weren't dating?
At the time, no.
No.
And then when I got back to Washington, yes, I began dating someone again and sold cars for a while, just as a job. I was bored.
Yeah.
And just as a job until I had found somewhere to work. I had tried to apply for a lot of places. Unfortunately, at that time, they were not looking for a lot of military folks, I found. I talked with a couple job recruiters that actually had told me to not attach my DD-214 to some of my applications and stuff like that, which is the paper you receive when you're discharged, because it says what type of discharge you have and stuff like that. And medical discharge due to certain related injuries. Does not look good, I guess, to people. They assume you have PTSD. And some companies.
Which was not part of your medical discharge.
No, it was not.
Why not?
I did not choose to go pursue it.
Do you think that you might have had it?
Yeah.
At the time of discharge?
I think a lot of people do.
Yes.
And not just in the military, in a lot of fields. Yep. From various things. It doesn't have to be even something uberly traumatic. But there are plenty of things that happen that affect all of us. But I chose not to pursue that. I had heard some rumors about people who had and then were no longer allowed to purchase weapons if they wanted to hunt and stuff like that because they were a threat or a concern.
So the social repercussions of putting that on paper outweighed the benefit.
In my opinion.
Story is very similar because a firefighter that we interviewed, he said the same thing. He said, I didn't want to be
labeled.
Put that on paper because I couldn't own any guns.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, there are people who definitely need it without a doubt that are not functional.
Right.
But I didn't feel like I was one of those folks. Still don't feel like I am one of those folks.
So because we're talking about relationships specifically, you said when you were traveling around, you were in Washington, you started dating. How is that relationship different than your military relationship? Did you feel a sense of relief that you could truly be who you wanted to be?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I was able to be open.
Yeah.
I could go for a walk in a park and hold someone's hand or, you know, do all the silly relationship things that people do. Show a form of public affection, stuff like that, without any repercussion, concern, who's watching, no anything. It was a huge relief.
Yeah, how did that affect your mental, if you're looking back now on your decade experience in the military and then how you would envision a relationship today, mentally, what would be the differences? For you.
Relationship-wise? I feel like I can truly be myself. I can still, for lack of a better term, still be a manly man.
Yeah.
But at the same time, still be a gay man. Whereas while I was in the military, I did not feel like I could really be that way.
Yeah, you had to pick a lane. You had to pick a hat to wear.
Correct. And the gay man side very rarely ever came out. And it was usually when alone with someone, and that was it.
And it's funny, you always hear about these relationships, not so much the Navy, because usually, you know, men and women, it's kind of limited on who's on what ship. But you do hear of these stories anyway, of people working together, it becomes a secret. And so then you add an extra layer of, not only were you a superior, so that's also an issue, but
huge fraternization problem.
But now, you know, you have this could ruin your life because of just who you are as a person.
Yes.
Did that mentally affect you in the future? Did you feel it, like you left that behind in the military?
At first it did. When I first started dating after getting out, it there was still that
stigma.
Yeah.
Resistance.
Correct. It's not just like, it's like, okay, we're done.
I'm free. I want to date everybody.
For me, it wasn't at least. Yes, it was there at first. But I eventually, and it didn't take much time. I eventually learned to just be able to let that go and put it in the past that, well, yes, that is what I had to do, but it's not what I have to do any longer. So.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's been a decade now, almost a decade, since that don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue, don't harass policy is gone. So it's almost like a lifetime ago, if you think about generations. If you had any advice to someone who's thinking about going into some first responder field and specifically is gay, because that's your experience, what advice would you give them?
First responder-wise? Or military.
Okay, we'll do military.
I mean, it's the same.
You're all same first collection of people, but
exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Military-wise, I'm all for someone being able to be themselves and the laws and rules in the military allow them to do that now. So I encourage you to be yourself, whatever that may be. At the same time, I guarantee without a doubt that there are certain commands that are still not very accepting of it or not comfortable with it maybe. So feel it out first, you know, before you walk into a room and just announce it, I guess. some people choose to do things like that. Mm-hmm. I would definitely feel the room first before talking to people about it. That would be my advice. But to each their own.
Yeah. Live and let live. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you get out of the military. You're in a new relationship. You kind of end up where you are today. You're in California now, working at a local EMS agency. How do you see your mental wellness today?
Much better. Still, there are still plenty of things in my past that I will always hold on to, that I will struggle with. But much better today. I can be open. I work at a place that I can be myself without any issues, without any repercussions or concerns on what someone might think of me. It's much more peaceful, I guess you could say. But at the same time, there are still plenty of things to struggle with. And now working for a local EMS agency, probably my biggest frustration is seeing things in the field, EMS, fire, police, even training programs and such, where you know something's wrong, but can't exactly get that involved because that's not what our job is. We are a regulatory agency. So you have to be able to take a step back at the proper times and say that's for the provider or whomever to work with, you know, say something to someone there, but that's for them to deal with. And that's very difficult. That was one nice thing in the military. Mm-hmm. When something's wrong, you handle it.
Fix it.
You handle it. That's it.
So, did you ever work in the field as?
No.
So what attracted you to the kind of back end of EMS side of things?
Towards my later years, while I was serving up in Washington, I started to get involved. I wanted to get involved with search and rescue up in the Puget Sound area and in the Olympic National Forest area. And so I decided to pursue first responder courses. And then it just kind of spiraled from there. I kind of grew this interest. And after I got out, I was lost for a little bit. I wasn't sure exactly what direction I wanted to go. And kind of remembered, hey, you know, I've got this training that I got, and let's see what we can do. And fortunately was offered a job where I work now, entry level, and worked my way up to where I am. And it's been fantastic.
Yeah. Well, interacting with EMS personnel, do you see a correlation of EMS and then your military side of things?
Without a doubt. And you can, we all have the same coping mechanisms, extreme dark sarcasm.
Yeah. And we talked before we got on here, you were talking about your coping mechanism was alcohol.
It was.
You know, you got into that and that's very prevalent.
It was.
So talk about that a little bit. How did you deal with fighting yourself out of it, you know?
You know, after I got out of the military, I didn't... Well, while I served, I drank a lot. And in my last few years of service, I lived alone. I didn't have any roommates even. Mm-hmm. So you find yourself drinking more because mm-hmm. There's no one around.
People appear magically when you're drinking.
Too much, James.
That's what it is. It's, hey, do you want to come over and drink? And that's what it became. That was the social thing. And you find yourself not drinking a six-pack. You're now drinking an 18-rack in a bottle or putting back a few bottles of wine or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just became more and more. And I was on a large amount of painkillers. Because I had a lot of joint issues and stuff, and that was, at the time, that was the military's fix still. If they couldn't fix you surgically, they just throw some pills at you. Mm-hmm. And that was just the way it worked at the time, which, thank goodness, it's not as bad anymore. Mm-hmm. By the time I'd gotten out, I felt myself not needing to drink as much anymore. I didn't have to cope. I didn't have to hide who I was any longer, which helped.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel the need to suppress with alcohol, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still drank, not excessively like I used to. But yeah, just kind of, for me, it was just kind of a, I don't really have to have this anymore type of realization.
You know, with your job position as an EMS specialist, you get notifications of first responders, specifically EMS, which usually are also associated with fire departments, police departments as EMTs. Can you talk about what you've noticed with the trend of DUIs?
There's a huge trend in our area. It's scary. You always see a big push around the holidays. The holidays can be rough for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Winter is a darker, gloomier time of year, and people tend to be a little more depressed, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very, very clear that in the fire, EMS, probably even law enforcement side of things, that people are still leaning towards alcohol for coping. There is a large amount of DUIs, a large amount of alcohol-related incidents that we receive.
Yeah.
And that's why I think just having these conversations are so important, just getting different perspectives. And this don't ask, don't tell. I mean, you have a unique perspective because, like you said, you're this manly man, you're going into the military, and then you had to lead this double life that no one knew about. And then your feelings of abandonment, you know, assimilating back to normal culture. But the problem is when you're mentally unwell, you have to lead a double life due to whatever. It leads to alcohol abuse, all these things. So if we do preventative care of starting the conversation before it gets to a point of chaos, maybe we can have people pause before they go there, before they get in the car. So for DUIs, what would be a process if a paramedic gets a DUI for your specific LEMSA? What would happen to them?
Paramedic-wise, it's actually state level thing for their license. We deal with their local accreditation, which if their state license is suspended or possibly revoked, then their accreditation would also be. EMT-wise is what we see the most in EMR. That's what we specifically deal with. And it just depends on the type of DUI, all the circumstances that come in. There's a full investigation that goes into looking at everything from the police report to the court records, everything that goes into it before any decisions are made. The state has what's called MDOs, Model Disciplinary Orders, which basically set a baseline of if this is what they did, this is what the punishment should be, or so on and so forth. And you go from there and move up and how harsh it can or cannot be. And it's... it's a frustrating system. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. I'll leave it at that. Yes.
It's hard to get into too much without...
Yeah.
A lot of folks are recommended to seek treatment. Usually it's their employer at the time that... would push for stuff like that, especially the fire department seem to be a little better about it, honestly, in my perspective, than some of the private providers. But certain times they have to, you have to do like a CSAM, alcohol evaluation, basically, all sorts of things. But there are many conversations that could be had to help prevent this. I know I try to visit training programs as much as possible and talk to the kids before they...
The kids?
Sorry. The folks. I apologize. The folks before they ever even get into the field. And hopefully put some sort of plug in their brain that this isn't the answer. And if you ever do get in that point, there are a million different options other than getting behind a wheel.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
All right. So, Pete... kind of nearing the end here. What we like to do is a little rapid fire.
Oh, dear.
And Bree's conjured up some questions here that are pretty interesting. And we think that you'd be a good fit for them. So the rule is One word or one phrase. That's the only way you can answer. One word or one phrase.
Okay.
All right. We'll see how good you are with instructions.
Okay. So, first question. If you were a superhero, what would your power be?
Time travel.
Time travel.
Number two, what have you done that you're the most proud of?
Served in our country's military.
Well, that is definitely something to be proud of. Three, if you were a type of wine, which type would you be?
Zinfandel.
Not even a thought.
I know, not even a pause.
Spicy. Jammy.
He likes the consistency. It's a consistency, man.
Okay, number four. If you were running for office, what would your campaign slogan be?
Oh, wow. Boy, that is a difficult one. It would probably be something in the sense of we're in this together.
That's very diplomatic.
Yeah.
All right, and last question. What is one word to describe yourself?
Boy. Dedicated.
Ooh.
That's a good one.
Wow.
That's awesome. Well, Pete.
Before we got on here, there was a lot more that is Pete that we need to share. So we would definitely love to have you back on, buddy. Thank you so much for coming over and you know, spending a couple hours with us. And, look to have you on again.
Anytime. I love what you folks do and look forward to more and love to come back anytime.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Pete.
Yeah.
All right, guys. This is Project Made It. Call out.
I finally